thank you very much, Mr. Hoyer, and the honorable members of the City Council and fellow citizens of Minneapolis. I would think it would be appropriate if I would say that I have been sort of waiting for this day in one sense, and yet I have been sort of fearful of the day too. Because I appear before the City Council this morning with the express purpose of announcing to my colleagues in government and to the people of this city that I will terminate my work as mayor of the city of Minneapolis on the day of November 30th, effective as of midnight. I will be succeeded, as you all know, by one of your trusted, faithful, and efficient colleagues from the City Council, the gentleman that is seated here to my right, and one whom I have great confidence in, and one that I know that you know will do a splendid job for our community. I refer to none other than the president of this City Council, who under the terms of our city charter succeeds the mayor upon his resignation or for any reason for the leaving of his office, and that gentleman is Eric Hoyer. And to you, Eric, I want to wish the very, very best. I know that you're going to be thrilled with the opportunity of municipal service in the mayor's office, and I can honestly say to the people of this city that they are fortunate because of your years of experience as an alderman and because of your deep devotion to the best things for this wonderful city of ours. Now, I've been mayor of this community for 3.5 years. I am just about to turn that page in public service where I would be going on the last half of the second term. In other words, the last 6 months of that 2-year term that each and every mayor in this city has served. Before I go into a review of municipal activities, I want to take this opportunity of thanking the members of the City Council for their cooperation. I want to also thank you for the resistance, for the intelligent resistance, and for, let me say, the spirit of competition and investigation and interrogation which has existed in our municipal government. That's the way it ought to be. There ought to always be the crossfire of examination. There always ought to be the analysis and the objective analysis of proposals and projects. And I think that you are to be commended for your willingness to be thorough in your work and to investigate and to look to the best of this community. I also want to thank the people of Minneapolis. I was out in my old hometown of Huron, South Dakota this week. We had a wonderful dinner out there, and I can tell you honestly that my heart was filled with emotion when I saw friends from the days of the high school, the grade school, and days that I spent in Huron, South Dakota, in my father's business. And I couldn't help but think of the wonderful opportunities that have been provided to me as a young fellow. And in this city, I cannot help but think of the wonderful opportunities that have been afforded to me for municipal service and for citizenship in this, the most lovely city in the country. To the people of Minneapolis, I want to express my profound and humble appreciation, my gratitude for the privilege which has been afforded me to be a part of things in this city. There is no greater honor that can be bestowed upon any man than to be in public service. I care not whether that public service be a member of a board and a commission, where there is no financial remuneration, whether that public service be that of an alderman or of a councilman, of a county commissioner, or of a school board member, a park board member, or whether that public service be as mayor, or into the higher levels of the legislature, the governorship, or in the Congress of the United States. All of these are great honors, and I think every one of us needs to keep in mind that we are not just private citizens when we serve the public. We are public citizens. We're open to public scrutiny. We must be able, as they say, to take it, and by the same token, we must be able to give it, to stand up for what we believe, and to fight for the things that we think are right, recognizing that there's always the quality of error on the part of a human being, recognizing that we're all somewhat prejudiced by our environment, our background, or by the acquaintanceships or the information that may come to us. I have never posed as omnipotent, I never promised the people of this city miracles. I promised them but one thing. I said that if elected mayor of this community, I would do the best that I knew how to do. And that I have tried to do the best that I knew how to do with the facilities at my command, with the experience and the background and the understanding that I may have had. I recognize that there have been limitations. I think I have been the first to recognize that there was much to learn. I never at any time stated that as mayor of this city, the programs were of perfection, nor at any time did I say that my ideas were infallible. I presented them, programs and ideas, as a challenge to you and as a challenge to this city. I am one of those that believes that local government is the heart, the life stream of democracy. I believe that local government is the storehouse. It's the very life and blood of a free society. And believe me, gentlemen, local government cannot be a plaything. It must be something that's taken very seriously. To those in this community and other communities that worry about the ever-concentration of political power at high levels of government, federal levels, I say that the answer to that is effective, honest, able, and capable local administration. The people of this country, the people of this city will be served. They'll not find themselves in a political vacuum for long. They will find answers. And if you do not provide those answers, they'll go somewhere else. If local government is incapable of meeting the responsibilities of public service, then they turn to state government. If state government is incapable or fails to meet its responsibilities, then they turn, the people turn to federal government. And the further that this government gets away from the people, the greater the possibility, may I say, for inefficient government. The further that this government of ours gets away from the people, the greater the opportunity for corruption, inefficiency, and a type of bureaucracy which is cold and indifferent to the needs and the aspirations of our people. I want to leave a challenge, just one real challenge here this morning, and that is that every alderman, every department head, every board member and commissioner, every member of this municipal government of ours, rededicate ourselves to making local government the answer to the people's need, the answer to the real needs, the human needs of welfare, of shelter, of public service, of health protection, of education, of recreation, the answer to those needs that every family and every human being in this city of over 500,000 may have. Again, I repeat my gratitude and I express my deep appreciation for the opportunity to serve. Gee, it's been wonderful. Wonderful. There have been moments that you've had and that I've had when you wondered if it was worth it all. But I think every one of us know that it is, or we wouldn't aspire to the job. You know, I've said quite candidly, no one forced me to run for mayor. I wanted to, and I wanted to serve as mayor of this city. And I've had that chance. The people of Minneapolis were very, very good. And to them, I want to assure them of my appreciation. Now, just a word or two about these last 3.5 years. They haven't been easy. I don't suppose any years in government have been easy. The mayors that preceded me found difficult times. I've often had a real note of sympathy and of understanding in my heart for those mayors and aldermen that served during the period of the Depression. Those were turbulent and difficult days. But just as we had difficult days during the Depression, the 1930s, and just as we had them during the war years, we've had equally difficult days in the post-war years. I remember going into office on July 2nd, 1945. I remember that we were in that period of unrest, insecurity, when we were not sure as to whether or not there would be full employment or whether there would be Great Depression. I remember there was real concern in our own Board of Public Welfare and here in the City Council as to what the future would offer. And then, as if by magic, this country seemed to readapt itself or readjust itself to the problems of peacetime production and peacetime living. We've had all kinds of shortages. Your city engineer can tell you about that. You that are on the council committee. I want to say that polio epidemic was met with dispatch and with efficiency. the Emergency Polio Committee, chairman by our own Dr. Hennekins of the Board of Public Welfare, three members of that committee being Dr. Hennekins, Dr. Hill, and Dr. Pollard, three municipal servants. That Emergency Polio Committee did a job that no one expected that any committee could do. And in this community, we cared for over 1,700 patients afflicted with polio. I think it's only fitting and proper to mention also that out of that polio epidemic, a great public health research program came about, that we carefully and critically analyzed our medical and hospital facilities for the treatment of polio. And I also remember that out of it came a great grant of money to the University of Minnesota, which I doubt would have ever come if we had not in our own Board of Public Welfare threatened to raise our own money for polio research. And I'm happy to say that I personally had a hand in establishing the Minnesota Polio Research Commission, which today at the University of Minnesota has a grant of $750,000, the second largest grant in the United States, exceeded only, as I understand, by the University of Michigan, for research in the diagnosis, the symptoms, and the treatment of polio. Or we've had other emergencies too, like schools. That continues to be an emergency. And I remember a summer 1 year ago when emergency meetings were held for school financing. Citizens were called in, and we had to resort to the technique and to the program of bond issue for the maintenance of our school. And just let me say on this, this is a municipal disgrace, that a city that is as prosperous as the city of Minneapolis, a city that is as culturally advanced, a city that has the fine citizenship that this community has, should ever find itself in a situation where it cannot meet the financial requirements of the school. Now, there's always been some doubt as to whose responsibility this was. Let me say this, it's the responsibility of every citizen. It surely is not the responsibility of the city council as a jurisdictional problem or of the mayor. On that basis, it's the responsibility of the school board. But every parent in this city has a responsibility for public education. And quite frankly, you cannot maintain schools on depression budgets. You cannot maintain schools on a basis of a population that's much smaller, that was much smaller than that which we have. And the issue needs to be stated quite candidly and quite frankly. Either we're going to be willing to pay for the cost of education in this community, or we're going to find ourselves at an educational level that is anything but desirable and surely not worthy of the progressive traditions of the state of Minnesota and the city of Minneapolis. I hope that in the not too distant future, we'll meet this. But if we should not, if the people of this community, through the means of charter amendments, should not meet the needs of public education, then I think it's the job of the city council, it's the governing body of this city, to see to it that every boy and girl in this city does have education. And if the people of Minneapolis are insistent upon paying interest, upon bonds, in order to have schools open, then I say pay the interest, as much as I deplore that type of deficit financing. But if it's a choice between orthodoxy of finance and the lack of school, I say get the school and forget about the orthodoxy of finance. Because every boy and girl in America is deserving of the very finest of public education. A little more of that and we'll have a little less, may I say, of prejudice and bigotry and ignorance and lack of understanding. And the city of Minneapolis ought to lead the way. We have an excellent superintendent. We had an excellent one that preceded him. We have a fine school board. And we have a good school plan. And I want to say to my people and friends in this city, particularly those that are wage earners, there's no group in the world that has more at stake in public education than a wage earner. The man that's earning $50, $60, $70 a week. The man or the woman that cannot send their children to private schools. Those that are dependent upon public schools. And the public schools of this city ought to be better than any private school that money can buy. That's our job. And if the Board of Education does not find the means, then I plead with the city council to be the statesman and to be the civic-minded participants in government that will go ahead with the broad program, meeting the needs as they come. Oh, we've had general problems of city finances, but our city finances have not been catastrophic or, let me say, at an emergency situation where municipal services were to break down. I hope sooner or later better public relations will come for our municipality. In order to get things done, unfortunately, we have to talk about the alarming aspects. We always have to view with alarm instead of pointing with pride. We seem to have to use the shock treatment in order to get accomplishments. That, unfortunately, carries headlines out into the byways and the highways of Minnesota. And all too often, too many people in this state hear about the bad things of Minneapolis. I have always been of the opinion, and I want to state this as a proposal to you, that this municipality needs a public relations department, and it needs a good one. We need to tell our story. We take for granted our parks. We take for granted our community centers. We don't even brag about them, or we don't even tell the people about them. We take for granted the cleanliness of our streets. We take for granted the high caliber of municipal service of our municipal employees. We hesitate, and let me say, at times we fail to, in a systematic way, to ever tell the true story of what we're planning and what's being done for municipal development. Gentlemen of the council, a few thousand dollars a year dedicated to a Department of Public Relations that would be affiliated with your city research engineer's office will yield you dividends in the future that you cannot possibly evaluate at this hour. And it'll be good for every bit of the government and every bit of this city. Well, we've had a period of challenges, too, these last few years. We've met these challenges. I remember when the government of the United States called for a great food conservation program. I don't know how many people in this room know that the city of Minneapolis was the first city in the United States to respond to the challenge. We were the first city to establish an overall food conservation program, and the pattern of food conservation organization that was developed in this city was the national pattern. And that I personally received a letter from the chairman, the national chairman, of the food conservation program at a national level, reading that Minneapolis had led the way and that they had adopted literally in toto the outlines of structural outlines of our program. You can be pretty proud of that, that civic participation. When the clothing drive was called upon in 1946, we didn't just meet the requirements or the quota that was given to us, we exceeded it threefold. When the food drive was called by our government to aid the needy people in Europe, we went over our quota seven times. There's a type of generosity and municipal cooperation in this municipality, which I think is wonderful. And this didn't happen just because of government, and I want to just toss this in as a side glance. This municipal government cannot do the job for Minneapolis. No municipal government can. But working together with our organizations of business and of labor, I'm confident that any task can be met. And I want to reemphasize that there are many things that we disagree about. There are many things in politics that those of us in this room disagree about. But we all, I think, agree on some things. We all agree about the necessity of meeting such problems as the traffic problem. We all agree on the necessity of decent public health facilities. We all believe in a finer and a more beautiful city. We'd all believe in expanding in a growing city. Now, there isn't any reason that that needs to be the special preemptive field of any one group. It doesn't belong to the city council alone. It doesn't belong to the Chamber of Commerce alone, or the Junior Chamber, or the AFL, or the CIO. It belongs to all of them, every single one of them. And I repeat again, no group of people in Minneapolis have a greater stake in a better city than the wage earners. That's the group that depends upon public services more than anyone else. And it's up to my friends in the ranks of organized labor to lead the fight for these things. For better schools, better housing, better parks, better health facilities. Right down the line, broad, great programs of municipal nature. Your people, my friends, are the ones that need this help. Not the people of $25,000 and $50,000 a year income. Yes, they too will need it, and they too will participate. But they don't need it nearly as much as the family that has a gross income of $3,000 a year, $2,500 or $3,600 a year. We've had a period in which we've established new and better relationships for our city. I like to think that there were a few things that I did as mayor that were helpful. And I want to say that I have represented this city at conferences all over this nation. I think your city has had pretty good representation at these conferences, quite frankly. I have been a faithful member of the Conference of Mayors, where I have participated in the Resolutions Committee, where I have acted as an active member representing this city. And I want to say quite candidly that I want my city, sooner or later, to be a member of the U.S. Conference of Mayors, to give my successor a chance to be able to stand there in that great body, and that body of the Conference of Mayors is going to have some influence in Washington. I'll tell you that. There are quite a few of the mayors that were in the Conference of Mayors that are now going to be down at Washington. And I want to be sure that the city of Minneapolis is represented, because the United States Conference of Mayors is going to help draw the housing legislation. Already it's at work on it. The Conference of Mayors is going to aid in the hospital legislation. It's going to aid in the federal aid to education legislation. Now, if the city of Minneapolis wants to be on the outside of that, then don't complain if you don't get on the inside when the monies are expended and the grants are given. I hope to see Mr. Hoyer at the next meeting of the Conference of Mayors, because I will be there. I will be there as a participant and as a friend, and I want to know that my city of Minneapolis is there, too. I have represented this city as a member of the National Board of the American Municipal Association, which is the overall national organization of all the leagues of municipalities. I've been an active participant, and I think it's been good for our municipality. People need to hear about Minneapolis, not just about Buffalo, New York, Philadelphia, Cincinnati, but Minneapolis, too. We have a proud city, and we have something to be proud of. Let's keep up that representation. Let's be active participants. And I'm happy to report to the citizenry of the city that the aldermen of Minneapolis have participated in the American Municipal Association. That one of our own aldermen here was the former chairman or president of the Minnesota League of Municipalities, Mr. Glenn Wallace. And he did a wonderful job. And he gained the respect and confidence of hundreds and hundreds of municipal officials in the state of Minnesota. Now, on a state level, before I leave the federal level, I have likewise gone before two or three congressional committees as your mayor and as a public citizen. I know sometimes people used to say, well, Humphrey can't speak for Minneapolis, but I never proposed to always speak for Minneapolis, but I spoke for myself. And when I was elected mayor, people knew what I thought. They knew where I stood. And I took the liberty to speak for this city, and the liberty to speak for myself on such great things as the development of the Missouri River area, which means business for Minneapolis, Mr. Businessman. The Missouri River development is important to every business house in the city of Minneapolis. I took the liberty to speak on the matter of prices, prices that are consuming our municipal revenues. If a housewife thinks that she's being affected by high prices, or a businessman, then let him come and visit with the city comptroller, the city treasurer, or the city purchasing agent of the city of Minneapolis. And you'll see what we mean by high prices and what it does to us. I tried to represent the city in state matters. I appeared before several of the legislative committees of our state legislature. I think I had something to do with at least proposing and acting as a proponent of the state housing legislation that was adopted in 1947. I'm happy to say that I instituted the Tri-City Finance Committee, which is now beginning just to do the job that it ought to do. Last year was a pioneering effort. This year, they're really getting down to business. And I think that's a great program. It's going to produce real results. The council is to be commended for its active support of the League of Municipalities. I've gone up and down the state talking about rural and city relationships, too. And I think that's a job that needs to be done. You will never quite know the lack of understanding that exists between the smaller community and the big city until you go out to the smaller community and visit with them. You see, they only hear what is the extraordinary. They hear about our traffic accidents. They hear about the crime that we may have in any big city. They hear about our troubles financially. They hear about every fight that we have. That takes about 0.01% of the time of the business of this city. They don't hear about the other 99% because we don't tell them. It isn't their fault, it's our fault. That's why I said the public relations aspect is so important. Now, just a few general observations on Minneapolis. I said it was growing, and I say that the city services of this city basically are good and sound. I want to pay a special word of commendation to the department head. I think that the aldermen are justifiably proud in their selection of the department head. Every one that we have excellent men, as the heads of our departments. You can't help but know that if you work with them, if you visit with them. I hope that my friends in the City Council will be most charitable with them and will listen to their advice, because they're men of experience, they're men of background and understanding of their respective fields of endeavor, and to give them the support that they need, and never to be guilty of what we call plain politics. In other words, there's only one way to run a city engineer's department, and that's on the basis of public service and engineering principles. And I think that's the way it has been operated. It was operated that way under our dear friend, Mr. Paul, and under our new friend, Mr. Eric. And I know it's going to continue to operate that way. I want to commend particularly those persons that have been closely associated with me. I want to commend Mr. Pearson. I think he's one of the most able administrators of any municipality. He's taken on great responsibilities, and he has fulfilled them with dispatch and with efficiency. I want to commend our public health department. That public health department is growing and it's expanding, and it's needed. Believe me, it's needed. Every dollar spent for public health will save the city of Minneapolis $100 in the cost of illness, sickness, and this year. I hope that public health department may continue to grow. I'd like to say that despite some of the comments about our general hospital, there isn't a better municipal hospital in the Midwest. And its staff is of the finest, and its services have been improved. And all of this goes for such agencies too, may I say, or such other members of our government as our city employees. We've had good city employees. I know once in a while we've been a little bit alarmed because they wanted the cost of living increase, but they have to eat too. They have families to support. They have homes that they must make their payments on, or rental payments. And I want to thank and commend the City Council for its leadership in recognizing the humanitarian needs of these people, our city employees. Now to the fire department. I don't need to tell you that the fire department has had a glorious record. Really, it's been a most difficult one for the fire department these difficult years. Lost many of our men, George. Been some real sacrifice. But the equipment is being improved. There's still more to be purchased. And I want to speak for the fire chief here this morning that you can't expect the fire chief of this city to do the kind of fire prevention work and the kind of fire protection unless he has all the tools and the facilities and the manpower that are necessary to do that job. This is a growing city. We're not drying up. We're growing and developing. And to our very capable, able, and efficient fire chief, I want to express my thanks for his cooperation, his friendship. Then there's been one other department that's been very close to the mayor, and that has been the police department. And believe me, I want it crystal clear for all time that the police department of the city of Minneapolis has done an outstanding job. I know of no police department in any city in this country that has done a better job. We haven't been overstaffed. We've been understaffed. We haven't had vast amounts of equipment, modern scientific equipment. We've had a glaring shortage of it. We haven't had a great new public safety building where all of the accommodations are modern and up to date. We've had to work in the basement of the courthouse. The police department of this city has kept this city clean. The police department of this city has worked with efficiency, and it has worked with a steadfastness of purpose which should have earned by now the everlasting thanks and praise of all fair-minded citizens. And to the former chief of police, Ed Ryan, I want to express my gratitude for his leadership. And to our present chief of police, Glenn McLean, who has carried on in that same tradition and has been an outstanding law enforcement officer. I want to personally thank him and thank him from the bottom of my heart, because any fellow that's ever served as mayor of this city knows all too well what it means to have men who are loyal in that department. To you, Mr. McLean, to Mr. Jones, our inspector, to Mr. Bernath, our inspector of detectives, to every one of your deputy inspectors, to your captains and your sergeants and your lieutenants, to your patrolmen and your detectives, I want to thank you. I don't know how I can express it, other than to tell you that you've been loyal to me, to the city, to the program, and to this city government. And you can do no greater favor to Minneapolis, every one of us in this government, than to permit that program to be continued, to recognize that the police training we have established has put our department on higher standards, and to recognize that we're just beginning to build the kind of a police department that we need for this city. That's good for Minneapolis, good for every family, good for every business, good for everyone. Well, to the park board, we've gone ahead with our park board program, expanded our facilities. I just want to leave this one word of caution. The park board of Minneapolis not only has the best program of parks and playgrounds that anyone could ever hope to have, it's been a little bit costly, as some people have said, but I think it's paid off in the dividends of better citizenship and better youth and better families. We need a few more small parks. We need to remember, too, that parks are needed in those areas where they least can afford to have playground facilities. The parks of this city are most needed in the areas where working people live, where those of the lower income live. And that's true of our libraries. That's true of our schools. At least that's the way I look at it, you see.
I think
the schools, the best parks, the best libraries, the best skating rinks, and the new swimming pools
ought to be
areas of this city where the people can least afford themselves to pay for them. That equalizes the opportunities in Minneapolis. And it'll pay dividends in good citizenship, in productivity, and wholesome relationships.